Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Heritage Radio Network.
Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Today is Wednesday, April 3rd, 2024. It's our 15th year. Congratulations, 15th anniversary of Heritage Radio Network. And we have a special show tonight. We're going to go around the room and celebrate Transmitter Brewing. And they're going to be celebrating their 10th anniversary coming up soon. So let's go around the room and have all the guests introduce themselves. We'll start with my favorite beer photographer.
Hi, I'm Miguel Rivas, the beer tricker. Happy to be here. Happy to be back.
Welcome back, friend.
It's Bob Weisberg, sales guy for Transmitter Brewing.
Former WFMU DJ.
My name's Jennifer Gratterow, and I do the beer buying for Craft & Carry.
Jen, it's great to meet you. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you as well.
And I'm Ian Kalmus. I'm the head brewer at Transmitter Brewing.
Ian reached out to me a couple months ago with a big plan, and I'm sitting on top of the best night ever in New York City. Ian, what's going on at Transmitter?
Well, long story short, we've made it 10 years, and this Friday, May 31st, we're going to have our 10th anniversary party. So we're hoping to plug that frequently here tonight, and hopefully get the crowds riled up and have people show up and drink some tasty brews.
Well, congrats, man. Let's all taste and cheers. I just want to say, I'm sure most of our listeners know Transmitter, but Transmitter was like that mythic, mystique, super perfect brewery when it started out. And, I am speechless because I've got so many memories and we're going to talk about them. But to have Ian here and Bob from Transmitter and Jen, you're Craft & Carry, you're a top retailer. You've got a couple of retail locations. You're the beer buyer. So why don't you tell us what Transmitter means to you, you know, as a beer buyer? Because obviously you must like them because you're here.
Sure, of course. So Transmitter has always been so great with making sure that their beer is up to the quality and standards that they want it to be at. Any issues we have, they're always like on top of it, willing to help out. Plus they're local, which everybody loves. So super stoked to have them as part of our list, as part of our lineup.
Yeah, and Bob, tell us when you joined that group, because before, I know you were with Shelton Brothers Imports.
Yeah, well, that's maybe even more interesting because I worked for an importer for, I don't know, 7 years. And I'd always bring brewers from Europe or wherever they were coming visiting New York. Transmitter was the one place I had to bring them because I always thought it was the best brewery. It was it was unique, interesting, and it was something that I thought represented New York City that no other brewery represented that way. And I remember seeing, I'd bring these French brewers and Anthony would be there and Anthony would be like, why are you bringing these guys here? I'm like, because you're a great brewery. And he's like, eh, whatever. But so it's always been a favorite brewery of mine, you know, top number one brewery. And I always wanted it. Anytime I traveled with the Shelton Brothers overseas or even within the country, I'd always go to get some Transmitter bottles. I would bring the corked, caged 750 milliliter bottles at that point, bring those with me to share to people to show like this is New York City craft beer. This is the best of it.
Oh, yeah. When they started out, those 750 milliliter cork bottles were the coolest thing in beer and very hard to get. Remember the first time I met Anthony Accardi, he was like the mad scientist in a good way. And I remember he came to my Jimmy's number 43. He was very particular about the gas setting on the draft. and we had some great conversations. And I'm going to recap some of those because I think that whatever he started and him and Rob Kolb, you know, imbued, you guys have really kept that going. Miguel, transmitter.
Yeah, I've been, I think Ian just put it very nice when we were at the bar, like a fanboy for real, because I've known them since they
opened. You're a fanboy of like 100 breweries.
Yeah, but
you're the number one fanboy in beer.
Transmitter is, it's local. And, you know, I've been in New York for 22 years and, you know, I've seen them grow from, you know, when they were like super small to now. And like, you know, like Bob said, it's great beer, you know. And for me, when I first met them, when back when Michael Kaiser from Good Beer Hunting was in New York, that was in 2014, he came to do one of those with the Joshua Bernstein brewery tours. So he took
the homebrew tours.
Well, this one was with breweries.
Oh, okay.
But people that he knew from the home brewing. So he already knew Anthony and Rob.
Yeah.
And so he took us to Transmitter. And when I saw it, I was like, what is this place? Like under a bridge and what is this? And try their beers. And, you know, I've just been a big fan, especially because they make a style of beer that I love, which was, you know, Belgian beers. And they have stayed true to their craft since day one. So I respect that, you know, that's not... Actually, I don't think there's any other brewery in New York City that has done that. So kudos to that.
You know why? This is that kismet moment. Yesterday, Miguel texted me and said, I'm in New York City. What's going on? And I said, you know what? Tomorrow night, we're having the Transmitter 10th anniversary show on air. So you got to come in. But the reason I love what Miguel says is because we're talking about craft beer and changes and all that. But there's a myth and a story to Transmitter. Which is real. You know, it's Anthony and Rob under the bridge in Long Island City. And ever since day one, everyone's talked about how good that beer was. And Ian, I'd like to hear about how when you came on, you know, they moved over to Brooklyn and opened in the Brooklyn Navy Yard. And that's what the beers we're drinking now. How did you get involved? Because you went from the myth to the present.
So
and Bob, you can help me with the words, please.
So in the past, 2016, I got into craft beer. I was working at the Greenpoint Beer Works, which is where Kelso and Heartland brews were produced. The almighty Chris Kuzme got me that job. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows Chris.
Cheers to Chris.
President, CEO, and founder of Fifth Hammer Brewing Company. But I did a short stint there, and Rob and Anthony were looking for an assistant brewer I think it was April or May of 2016. I sat down with them. I brought homebrew, thinking, all right, let's taste some homebrew, guys. And actually, they were delighted and happy that I did bring some of my homebrew, albeit it was 10 o'clock on a Tuesday morning. But I sat down and chatted with them for, I don't know, maybe an hour and a half. And I think later that day or the next day, Rob emailed me and said, hey, we'd like you to come on and, you know, do all the things Transmitter. And that's basically been my job title since I started there. It's all the things Transmitter. I started assistant brewing with Rob and Anthony. I did all the cellar work. Did all the maintenance with Rob. We did all the packaging. I did the deliveries for 5.5 years until I crashed Anthony's Toyota 4Runner. And then I got Rob's 4Runner. And at that point, we moved to the Navy Yard and finally got a delivery guy and actual delivery van and so on and so forth. But this is my 9th year with Transmitter, which is... Hard to believe, but also, you know, pretty happy and satisfied with working for them for all these years. They're family at this point.
What was some of the first beers? Let's go through the myth, the numbers and the letters. You know, you're on your website. It talks about the Saison, but the one I've been drinking the most the last couple of years is the pre-prohibition lager. Tell us about the letters and the numbers and.
Yes.
How you can...
So they never wanted to name beers, and I don't blame them because it's, you know, it's so hard and everything's taken. Okay,
give us a couple examples. Well, what, yeah, we're sure. drink, so, what we're drinking has letters and numbers.
They all have letters and numbers.
It's pretty damn good on draft at Roberta's Pizza.
Yeah, so Bushwick. We have, we're drinking right now is BNY5. It's our take on a Sierra Nevada Pale. It's a West Coast style pale ale. And it's our first American hoppy beer that we've ever brewed.
But wait, Bob, why do I like this beer so much?
It's clean. It's easy. It's hard to drink just one of these. You know, you put one down and you're, by the time you're on the last sip, you ready to order another one.
Sales guy. Jen, why do you, you're a beer buyer. You're tough. The thing about beer buyers is you get to be tough about it. Do you like this beer?
Oh, it's absolutely phenomenal. And I love a West Coast style beer. So this is right up my alley.
Yeah, I feel like this is the right style for 2024. Magala, what do you think about the BNY?
I tried it for the first time on Saturday. I was at the brewery with Anthony on Saturday. I tried it. I'm not a big fan of like IPAs, but you know, when Anthony told me, no, this is a pale ale, like just think Sierra Nevada. I was like, all right, I'll try it. And I tried it and I was like, damn, I can drink a whole bunch of these. So
yeah. I'm glad you mentioned the Sierra Nevada connection, Chen.
I was going to say, it's very balanced. Like, you are getting the malt character come in, but the hops are still giving it that complexity, too, or the bitterness that it needs.
That's nice. And Ian, like, you know, all these myths and stories, a Saison brewery, farmhouse brewery, but you guys make a lot more beers than that.
Yeah, that's our focus. Our bread and butter has always been Saison and Beer de Garde, which is basically a French Saison. And then barrel-aged sours, fruited sours, kettle sours. And then when we moved to the Navy Yard, we really needed to expand the breadth of beer style. And so we started making lager, or more lager, because you need lager in a tap room. If you have we have 14 lines at the Brooklyn Navy Yard, and so we had to fill some of the gaps with, you know, a lager beer or two, maybe a dark lager from time to time. And so that's really kind of opened up the breadth of style for us and challenged me as a brewer, to be honest, to create, you know, the full gamut of beers for our patrons.
Ian, do you feel that going from the, you know, the original model to the Navy Yard, where there's more of a taproom setting, do you feel stretched too much, you know, trying to make all those different styles for a taproom? Why can't taprooms just have like two or three beers and that's it?
I don't. We have an interesting model. So we've kept most all of the equipment from the old place. And so at this point, we have fermenters that are 3 barrels, 6 barrels, 9 barrels, 12 barrels, 18 barrels. We have 20 barrel fermenters and 30 barrel fermenters. So at any point throughout the year, I can make, you know, 6 barrels of beer de garde. I can make 30 barrels of lager. I can make, you know, 20 barrels of hoppy golden ale. So we really have the flexibility to, you know, make as much or little of each style that then we can, you know, either put on wholesale or just have for the tap room. And it's been afforded us the opportunity to really fill in that tap list.
And now, like, what's the mix of distribution and tap sales for you, roughly?
So we've always been built on a model of heavy wholesale. Just because when we were in Queens, we didn't have a tap room. We just had bottle sample pours, and you know, there wasn't a lot of foot traffic there. So it's always been wholesale heavy, which definitely helps and hurts you at the same time. I think at this point it's probably 60-40 wholesale on premise. Bob, would you?
I'm not sure about the numbers. I just know I go out and work hard every day.
Yes,
but. But we have been trying to find good partners to work with. As the sales guy, the thing, you know, one salesperson, I'm always looking for higher end restaurants, bars, places that appreciate the kind of beer that we make, because it's not cheap. And there's a beer that Ian just poured that is an interesting one to talk about now. It's a restaurant chain called Unapologetic Foods. They have some of the best Indian food restaurants in the country, here in New York. And we made a special beer for them. I think Ian's better equipped to tell us about the beer and how it's made and what it tastes like, Ian.
Yeah, sure. So it's called UN1. Unapologetic Foods has, I think, at this point, 6 restaurants. Some of the highest regarded Indian food in the city. I think it's the only, Sema is the only Michelin star Indian restaurant in the city. And the label that the folks on the radio here can't see, but Miguel has in his hand, is taken from their branding that they have at the restaurant. It's very colorful, a stripe of multicolors and some kind of cool infographics and things of that nature. But it's a basmati rice lager. And so we pitched it to the group. Let's make you a house lager. I think we kind of pushed them toward making a rice lager. It made sense. They're like, they were in love with the idea. They actually gave us rice to then cook at the brewery. So we cook the rice the day before we brew. We incorporate that cooked rice into the mash. And then pretty much same as usual, lager recipe, send it to the fermenter and it sits cold, after primary fermentation for, upwards of 12 weeks, to kind of get that nice crispiness, before we then package it in 12 ounce cans.
Wow. What's that flavor, Jen? I mean, you're a good taster. The minute I tasted this, I was like, wow, there's something going on here, but I can't describe it. Can you describe it?
Can I describe it? I have to have one more sip.
I just want to add to what Ian said for the listeners that can't see. There's going to be beautiful pictures of this can. So just check, I don't know, Transmitters.
At the Beer Tracker.
Transmitters feed or the Heritage Radio Network or mine. And you will see this beautiful can.
Jet.
And me drinking
it. I love how it sounds when it pours. Yeah, I'm getting kind of like it's like a honey sweetness from the malt. But the rice lager is thinning out the body, so it's making it super sessionable. Don't really get too much of the hops, which is nice, because I think it would maybe be a little bit overboard on that.
And even though this is like a special beer for a chain, is this something, like, at some point we're going to jump ahead to Bob selling to you, but we're going to keep asking your expertise. But yeah. The flavors are crazy in this.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't know what it was. And can you say again what you just said?
Sure. I'm getting a honey sweetness from the malt. With the hops, it's not too overpowering, but maybe just a little bit of the citrus notes. But really, it's just like the malt shining through. The yeast flavor is pretty subtle.
Ian, is that what you wanted?
Yeah, absolutely. We want kind of that complexness that you get from the rice, also the light body on the finish, but also, that upfront malt flavor. I think it goes especially well with the food they make because they make some spicy food. And so you eat some of the food at their restaurants and then you look to grab this can and you're done by the time you finish that can real quick.
How does basmati rice differ from if you just use the regular rice?
That's a good question. I don't know if you could definitely pinpoint basmati rice versus a different type of rice necessarily. Basmati rice is a longer grain rice, which makes it actually easier to cook and then use in the brewing process. A shorter grain rice, you'd have more problems with filtration, whirl offing.
The husk.
Not the husk though, but the shorter grain rice could get stuck in the mash tun and provide more complicated runoffs and issues with the brewing process.
And then do you just cook the rice in, like, what do you do with rice and beer? I still don't understand that.
So we use our kettle to
use the rice cooker and then I throw it in.
Yeah. We use our kettle for to cook the rice. So it's, it's just on a larger scale, but it's, we boil water and add the rice and strain it.
I mean, I'm not a brewer, but I have brewed rice lagers as well, and you do it to take some of the starch out, correct?
Yeah, so there's a little bit of starch you lose in that water. But also you have to gelatinize it. There's a pretty technical path that we could get down that I'm sure the listeners are not into.
They might, but also, I don't know if that, Bob, how do you sell it then?
Well, this one I don't have to sell. It sells itself, and it's only available at a couple of restaurants, Damaka in Essex Market, Sema in the West Village, Masala Walla & Son, Park Slope on Fifth Ave, Ada in Long Island City, Knox, which is the Filipino restaurant that the group has opened up recently in the East Village. So it's only available at a few places. And when I drink this beer, I've read a lot about Budweiser. I don't really enjoy Budweiser, but I love the history. And I always imagine this might be what Budweiser in the late 1800s might have tasted like as the most premium lager that was available at that time, because they used rice and no one else used rice. And rice was used to create to mimic the flavor of the Czech pils, the original Czech pils. So this is definitely a hard find, and you can only find it at these restaurants, and it's worth seeking out and finding. So it sells itself.
And just to add, the food is absolutely incredible at all of their locations. So that's, you know, you don't have to go just for the beer. It's a culinary adventure.
I'm sure I'm going to have to visit the restaurants now. I'm kind of jealous because I can't get my hands on it, and you let me try it the other day, and I was like, this is so good. Why did you do that to me?
Okay, do you think that this other restaurant will let you sell it to some other places?
No.
No, it's exclusive. Well, Jenny, are there other rice lagers on the market that you've had or sold?
Yeah, we've had a bunch. It's a pretty popular style. I feel like I can't even think of one on the spot now. But usually, Evil Twin does a purple rice lager, which is pretty interesting too. That would be one.
I think KCBC has had one for a long time.
Yeah, KCBC is another good one.
But this is the one I taste the rice in, you know. And Bob, go back to what you said. I like beer history. I'm sure when Budweiser was first brewed, it tasted like this. Why did you say that? How did you figure that out?
I've read a lot about Budweiser, and I would love to like that beer, and I don't, and it's whatever, you know. I like Tecate. I do like light lagers, cheap beers, sure. But it was very difficult for Budweiser to mimic, to recreate Czech pils.
In the 1800s,
they were working with American malt, you know, American barley. It's different than the European barley. They were working with different water, I'd imagine. And they had a scientist, a German brewmaster, who was a recipe master in New York City. And they said, we want a beer that tastes like this. And the guy just worked on it.
So that's why they started using rice.
And that's why they started using rice. And it was more expensive to use rice than barley back in the 1800s.
Wow. So Ian, so with that as an intro, this is neat. What we love about Transmitter is that I always think of you guys as a top-notch brewery in terms of your knowledge of beer and attention to detail. Tell us more about brewing this lager. I know it's weird, but guys, this guy made
I have two more points on this beer before we move to the next beer. One is we just won silver medal at the New York State Brewers Conference for light lager, modern and contemporary, which is pretty damn impressive considering we are not lager experts. Threes did win the gold medal, so I feel like we're in good company.
There were 77 entries in that.
Two great lagers made in New York City. I love that.
And the second point is, so we don't use German malt. We use Belgian malt in this beer, which is kind of an ode to our history and our upbringing, which I think gives it a little bit of a different not only texture, but flavor, malt flavor profile.
So can I make a slogan things for your 10th anniversary?
Absolutely.
Beer's more than Super Bowl ads. I feel like we have to go back and just recreate why there's so many great local breweries, but that's a great intro. Jen, what would you ask a brewer when you have him sitting in front of you about this beer? I want you to ask a great question because, I mean.
No pressure.
You're the dynamic multi-unit beer buyer, which is really the future of where these things are going. So.
Yeah. I think Ian kind of covered my main question with the, I guess, brewing process with rice and how a certain rice affects the beer. But really just like how you get it to be so smooth. Cause I think a lot of people, when they think of lagers or pilsners, they'd say, oh, it's so crisp. Right. And not that this isn't crisp, but what kind of makes this a little smoother than maybe what you would think a crispy boy, for example, would be.
So I think the malt has to do with that. And then this sits cold for a pretty long time. But it doesn't, we don't crash it right away. So this will go through primary fermentation. Then we do a diacetyl rest. And then we incrementally bring it down, temperature. So like a degree or two a day. So that adds to the lagering time. This beer is not fast. It's probably one of our slowest beers we make. But I think that kind of gentle glide down into the cool zone, kind of softens it up. The other thing I like to add is that Anthony is a master with salts and water chemistry. And so all of our beers really have either a really salty tone to it or a super soft tone. And I think that has the major factor there is the water chemistry that we're playing with.
Can I add something? Because you said it when you were talking about the beer time. You said 12 weeks, right?
Yeah, at least.
Okay. So that has to do a lot with clearing the beer, the crispiness of the beer. And I know that a bunch of brewers are going to get hurt and pissed, but that's just how it is. Like, they want to make lagers and turn it in like 4 weeks, 5 weeks. Sure. Then, no. Like, if you cannot respect the time to make a beer, don't make it.
That is a very good point.
As simple as that. Because you're trying to do something and just rush it just because you need to sell it. I understand the whole point of all the economics, but then don't make it. Because what you're doing is a disservice to the rest of the breweries who are making it properly to taste good as it should taste. And then people are going to try that beer that is only like 5, 6, 7 weeks. And they're like, oh, I don't like lagers. Yeah, of course, because it's not ready. That is exactly why it's not ready. So that's just my contribution to this.
We got another rice beer pouring out the can right now, S8. And Ian,
wait, probably, why is it S?
I was going to say, Ian, Ian, let's
let
him in
through
on
the
secret.
Letters, because there's a G, we have B, N, Y.
A, B, C, D, E, F, G. No, so S is Saison.
But with a lot of respect for Transmitter. And before you say that, one thing with Miguel, I know you were hanging out with Anthony Accardi the other day. One of the first times I met Anthony Accardi, maybe 8 or 9 years ago, he was the first brewer that I met in New York who talked about the time that beer needs to take to be good. And he wasn't critical of people that rush beer, but he did use the term, there's brewers that rush beer, and I won't say who they are, but for me, this is what Anthony said, it's important to take the time that beer needs. And it stuck with me because no one else in New York had told me that at that time. It was probably 2014, 2015.
Yeah, so beer's a living thing. Like, yeast is a living organism. And there's sugar that is in wort that the beer, that the yeast eat to produce ethanol, alcohol, carbon dioxide, and this, you know, shelf-stable, delicious beverage that people drank when there was no water to drink. So, you know, there's a huge history to beer and the importance of beer. And if Bob wants to get into that, you can get into that. He's shaking his head now.
Yes, brewers, don't sell yourself short. They didn't just drink. We got to straighten this out. The myths. You need to create myths of New York City beer. People didn't just drink beer because they were worried that the water wasn't good. These days, guess what? Everyone in America is worried about the water quality.
That's true.
They buy filters and all this stuff. But why? There's a good question. Each of you tell me, why do you drink beer? I'm going to start with Miguel. This is a very deep conversation, Ian.
Oh, I like beer for many reasons, but one of the main ones is because it gets people together. It gets people together, and you create this camaraderie with people that from all walks of life. And, you know, I think the best way to describe it is like it's a social lubricant. And, you know, traveling around the world that I've been doing this for 10 years, just
Bob,
meeting people.
Next. Keep going.
He's talking about Gemütlichkeit. Yeah, I drink beer because if I didn't, I'd be
Gemütlichkeit.
I'd be too skinny. No, I do it for the money. No, I'm not sure. I've been
next gen.
I'm doing it for the opposite reasons, to gain weight. But no. Beer is just so complex and beautiful and so much more than people even realize.
Ian.
I like creating it. That's one of the reasons I
you don't
I drink
beer.
It. No, I drink beer. what's actually really gratifying is seeing other people drink the beer that I make and how happy it makes them.
And I'll tell you why I like it. Because I was out all day. There's two reasons I like beer. And it's time. This is the show about why we like beer. And it's great to have it on Transmitter's 10th anniversary. One, I've been out all day between trains, subways, all this stuff. And I came in into Roberta's Pizza anticipating the thrill of seeing all my friends here from Transmitter in the city. And I was so happy that I had the BNY, which I guess means
Brooklyn Navy Yard
5 beer. And I looked it up and it's a pale ale. And I just needed that first beer because I needed the electrolytes. I needed my stomach to settle. There's things that beer does that water doesn't, kids. And the flip side, when it's a Friday night and I'm really having a good time, I want this beer is like Belgian style triples and other beers we're going to talk about that take me to another place that wine doesn't and alcohol doesn't. So, in the words of Tom T. Hall, I like beer. It makes me a jolly good fellow. Okay.
We're doing a bunch of events for the 10th anniversary of Transmitter. It's a big deal, 10 years. One of the things we're doing is a big benefit for a beloved local radio station, WFMU. You mentioned it before. We're doing a big benefit at a great restaurant event space called Radio Star in Greenpoint. It's right next to Transmitter Park and Transmitter Brewing, named for Transmitter Park. So that's going to happen on May 1st. It's a big benefit for the nonprofit radio station, WFMU, freeform radio station.
We might not be live by then.
Oh, no.
Oh, no. It's okay.
You can still donate.
Thank you, but you still love beer. The only reason I went on that tack, and I don't usually, we have a great, we're in the studio, Roberta's Bushwick. We've got some great guests, and we're not always here anymore, but it's so great to be here. And thank you guys. But there's a reason to like beer besides the fact that people used to not have clean water because I'm happy to drink beer. But we're going to take a short break. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio on Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni. Congrats, HRN. It's the 15th anniversary of Heritage Radio Network. Support us and become a member at heritageradionetwork.org. All right, this is the 10th anniversary of Transmitter Brewing. We're here in the studio of Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick. I got Miguel, Bob, Jen, and Ian. We're all talking about Transmitter. So, Ian, take it away. We were talking about your rice lager before. Let's move on to the Belgian-style beers.
Yeah, so the next beer I brought was S8. As I mentioned before, S stands for Saison. 8 is just the number. So, at this point...
So, Transmitter has this history. Besides that, we're building a myth. It's got bottles with these amazing labels with, like, a letter and a number. Why did they... What do those mean, and why did Transmitter do that?
So, simple reason that we didn't want to name beers. There is a and a plethora of silly named beers out in the market right now, whether they were good, bad, or ugly. And so
when you put a name on a label, do you have to copyright that?
No, you don't have to copyright it, but you have there's a bunch of compliance that goes into it. You know, you have to register with the state and the Fed, and you know our branding is so specific. We didn't want to have to come up with you know silly names or outrageous names or just names like Saison One. So we did the number letter combo, letter number combo. And so S is Saison, A is Abbey. B is black beer, G is golden ale, T is triple, F is farmhouse, W is wit, PHs are all kettle sours. Mostly of them are fruited. But this specific beer also has rice in it. It's a rice saison. So a Belgian style saison that's fermented with single strain Saccharomyces. We use flaked rice. In the mash, which is a little bit different from the beer we had earlier. And then this is hopped continuously through the boil with new age German hops that are kind of what I'm getting is like a fresh, spicy melon. Anybody else have tasting notes on this guy?
Well, I just wanted to say thank you also for putting all this information on the cans. It's super helpful for customers and for the people that are selling it.
Yeah, so Jen, for you, you know, you're a top retailer, you're a beer buyer for a few locations of Craft and Carry. Yeah, how do you measure, you know, I like the beer, you taste it. How do you choose your beers and, you know, all that? Tell us about what you do, because you're really good.
Thank you. You're giving me so much credit today. so pretty much.
I will say this. Transmitter seal of approval. If Transmitter invited you, I know that you're good at your job.
That is true. You all are giving me all the credit. Yes, buddy. yeah, so pretty much it just depends on what the store needs that week. But the way that Transmitter does it is really nice because they will actually put a description of their beers and everything on the sell sheet as well. So that's super helpful in deciding what kind of profiles or flavor profiles I want to be with the store. Then it's mixing up what they need and what they already have.
What's your number one seller for Transmitter?
At overall?
It's up to you.
Okay. I'm going to say Upper West Side. It's like, it's interesting, right? Every neighborhood kind of gravitates towards something different. So I think the Upper West Side store does really well with the Saison. So S8 or S9, the Noble Saison, really sells nicely. In Brooklyn, they gravitate more towards Pilsners. So the L1, the Bohemian Pose, is really nice. Gramercy, I think, does better with sour. So the pH, what is it, 9 for mango?
pH 6 is
pH
mango.
pH 6 is mango. That does good. But the W1, the Grapefruit Wit, or the Schwartz beer is also
a And Bob, seller. What's it like selling to a retailer?
Well, she left out one of the best beers that we have right now, the CC1. Yeah.
Save the best for last.
What's CC1? What does that mean?
CC1 is actually Craft and Carry 1. It's
you have
a
custom
beer? Yeah, we have a collaboration beer.
That's right.
Tell us about that. Is that a Belgian style triple?
It is a Belgian style.
Guys, that's where
triple.
I want to go. I feel like that's the beer I want to drink.
Ian, did you bring that?
I didn't.
Wait,
bring
Jen.
That one.
How did the collaboration? Did you decide what style you wanted?
Yeah, Bob and I together kind of decided to go with that route. We knew we wanted to do something Belgian and a little bit higher ABV, but it's so good.
So let's talk about that process. How did you guys collaborate on a beer?
Well, first you guys came by, was it May 2022 with, I don't know, 50 people from Craft and Carry?
Yeah, 2 years already. That's crazy.
Well, Jen, tell us what you did.
So we had a tour there and we got to see not only the brewery space, but tour the production area as well.
In the Brooklyn Navy Yard?
At the Brooklyn Navy Yard, yeah. And a lot of us had never been there, so it was a great opportunity.
That was all your staff?
Yes, it was a combination of a lot of people from different stores. And Ian was there doing his thing. So we got to learn about the brew process, about the production side of everything. They were nice enough to give us tasters on a lot of their beers as well. And then that's kind of like what got started for talking about, hey, we should do a collaboration together. And it took a little bit of time, but we got there and it's out now.
So why did you want to do a Belgian style triple for your collab?
Well, Transmitter just does Belgian beers so well. And I think we wanted to go with something a little bit higher ABV, but I actually am not the biggest fan of triples, and this one I totally love because it's not as fruity or it's not as sweet. This one finishes pretty dry.
Guess what I'm going to announce for this show? To me, 2024, this will be the second show I've said this on, is the year of Belgian style triples. America. All right. Okay. Bob, so this process, collaboration.
Yeah. The crew from Craft & Carry came in, and with Ian, they made a beer. I don't know. I wasn't there. Ian, you talk about
Ian, let's talk. Yeah, I mean, look, the reason I say that is I was out in Denver last week, and there's a show coming out, in Brews Brewing, dedicated since day one to Belgian-style beers. And the first beer they gave me was a triple, and it just reminds me of when I'm out on the town, I would like to drink a Belgian-style triple and move up to a quad. Because, I mean, you think about when you're drinking wine, most wine's 11, 12, 13%. So sometimes there's times like today, I wanted the lager or the pale ale because I'd been out all day. I've been on subways and things. My stomach was upset. And I went for a run if I ran, settle my stomach and just get my electrolytes back. But then when I want to really relax, people are thinking these days, and for competition, cocktails, liquor, glass of wine. Well, guess what my glass of wine is? It's a Belgian style triple. So why did you guys do a Belgian style triple, and tell us about that process?
Well, we talked like what sells well, like what's going, what's moving right now. Like also the time of year, we started discussing this back at the end of last year, and we're like, oh, let's, you know, New York City Beer Week's coming up. Like let's try and nail a brew for New York City Beer Week release. You know, it's still February, cold, rainy, snowy, whatever. You know, something that is higher ABV, that's like warming, that is gonna, you know, be well-rounded, but also complex, and just, you know, really make you happy after you drink one. And I would only recommend drinking one, maybe two. I think it's 9.5%.
Well, how did you go
for that? But it doesn't taste like it.
Some of the triples are 8%, some are more. Yeah, how did you determine the body and the feel? Are we drinking one today?
I think that's more Ian's roll-on.
Yeah. So, you know, it's...
Do we have any to taste?
I did not bring any.
I didn't either, so it's okay.
Yeah.
So I did, but I drank it all.
We packaged it specifically for the stores to sell, and so there really isn't any to steal at the brewery for take-home sake. But... I lost my train of thought.
Well, the Belgian triple style, this collab.
Oh, just, you know, it was a great beer to have, at the time. The higher ABV sells well at a bunch of their locations.
So, Ian,
I remember what I was saying. So,
he needed me to say that. Yeah. I love this guy.
So it's all like 98% is Belgian Pilsner malt. But the thing that where we add our transmitter touch is we make candy sugar in house. And so
I read that on the website. Thank you.
So, and that's kind of where our Belgian beer is different from other Belgian, style beers produced in the States, is that we're making the candy sugar in house. And so, what we'll do is we'll cook sugar over a long period of time, and it's just, you know, domino sugar, you know, your table sugar that we will dissolve in water and then continuously heat for multiple hours, if not days.
It's like a Tres Leches kind of thing.
not quite.
That's milk, but
yeah, not quite. But to the same point, it drives a complexity to the fermentation profile that you can't get elsewhere. The other thing is, like, you can buy Belgian candy sugar on the internet or through brewery supply groups and whatnot, but it's astronomically expensive. So we literally pour sugar into hot water and cook it. And then what's nice about it is you can make it ahead of time because it's so shelf stable, is that we'll make a whole bunch of it and then we can kind of pick and choose when we want to use it.
Let's go back in time. The magic of Belgian style triple. There's something about this candied sugar. It's not a sweet beer. It's like one of the driest beers I drink. It's a higher alcohol. It's smooth as heck. What's the magic of that? It's not magic. It's science. But tell me.
Of the sugar?
Well, you know all the, you've been in all the Belgian beers, Guldenberg, and all these other really great Belgian triples. What's the magic of it? It's the candied sugar, but how does that make this beer so good? Because it's not sweet. I think, and I think it's important for our listeners to know that
it's candied
sugar just doesn't make,
it's caramelized.
It's not a
right?
sweet beer.
Right. So it's cooked. Yeah. It's cooked down. It's crystallized, caramelized. There's some sugars that aren't fermented out. So that it should have a little bit of sweetness. I mean, I'm not the brewer here. I just drink it and enjoy
it. Yeah, so it's perceived sweetness. All of that sugar is highly fermentable. And it that also helps fermentation. So it kickstarts fermentation. It gives like a vigorous fermentation. Like a lot of these Belgian beers we make that have candy sugar, they blow off out of the fermenter and they make a mess all over the brewery floor. But it's all that sugar is fermentable and it should totally dry out. And actually,
what's the word for that when it dries out?
Gives
it an
attenuation.
Attenuation, yeah. Thanks, Bob.
I know something.
I was with Belgian styled beard specialist last week, so I knew the word attenuation. Jen, did you know that word attenuation?
I did, yeah.
You did that too. So how do you sell it to your customers when you say Belgian triple? I know when I tasted it 25 years ago, I never had to go back.
I mean, to be honest, we just say it's a collaboration with Transmitter and they're already about it. So, but yeah, pretty much I would say that it does have like a little bit of floral notes and you don't really get that alcohol warmth. And I think that's really approachable for people because it feels like they can drink it and not have to worry about burning their throat.
Yeah, it's not a hot no. alcohol, and it is dry and it's delicious, but it definitely has a kick.
So maybe the Transmitter, do you guys also make a triple or you only make the triple for Craft and Carry?
We make a few different triples. We make probably two or three. We do a pretty straightforward Belgian triple, and then the one that is kind of special and not brewed as frequently as I would hope is a T4. It's a citrus triple. And that also has it has citrus candy sugar in it. And so what we do is...
So it's more complicated for you.
Yeah, more complicated. And we have to line up various brews to... in order to schedule that. Because what happens is we'll brew a, say, W1, which is our grapefruit wit. So I'll take grapefruit peel. The grapefruit peel goes in W1, but then the flesh of the grapefruit, the pith, will get juiced. And then we take the spent fruit and we'll add hot water and sugar to that. And we make our own marmalade in-house. That marmalade will go into the mash.
What do you have, a stove with a pot? What, I mean, what scale are you talking about?
Like 20.
I have a Thai chef friend. He's going to make hot pot brisket. It's only the size of a 10-gallon pot.
No, we have one of Anthony's old homebrew pots, which is probably 25 gallons. And so we cook that on a burner. And so we'll take citrus from... a previous brew where we use just the peel. We'll take the whole fruit, we'll juice it, take the spent pith and fruit, cook that down with hot water and sugar, making marmalade. The marmalade goes in the mash, and then the juice, we do a concentrated 1-to-1 sugar to citrus juice to make citrus candy sugar, and that goes in the beer as well.
Why are you not selling that at the brewery? Like those jams, like when you go to Belgium, for example, when you go to Orval, they have like a little cafe in the corner before you enter the monastery, and that's what they serve you. They serve cheese that they make, and the only thing they put on that cheese is like celery salt, and they pair it with the beer. And you guys should be doing the same thing, like with your beer, the jams.
So we should, but talk to the FDA about that.
Yeah, that was my question. So
that's a good thing about license. So when you're making things in the brewery, being part of alcohol,
it has to go in the beer and ferment out. Like we can't make food product to then sell as food product. That's outside our license and against against the rules and laws of the SLA and et cetera.
I don't know, Bob. When I'm on, you're out on sales. Do you get into all these conversations about Belgian style or lagers, or do you just say Transmitter and everybody wants to buy it?
It depends, and depends on if the account is familiar with Transmitter's history, if they're familiar with beer styles. I'm dealing with grocery stores sometimes, dealing with small retailers, and also dealing with fancy restaurants. So if we're doing a tasting at a high-end restaurant, they want to know about this stuff. So you don't tell them things they don't want to know. You tell them things that they do want to know, they need to know. So it's different every time.
Well, this is a crazy moment. In 1 week, Brews Brewery in Denver, Jen at Craft and Carry, and Ian at Transmitter have all told me that this is the year of Belgian Style Triple, which is one of the beers I used to drink when I was younger that I still can't stop
drinking. Keep pushing it. Keep pushing
it. That's good. So back to other favorite beers I've had. It was like a year ago. We kicked off the year here at Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, and there was a pre-prohibition lager. Let's go back to that beer. That didn't have a number on it.
I bet it did.
I had it on draft.
BNY 1, which is... was our first beer we made to pay homage to the Brooklyn Navy Yard. And so it's kind of a outside of the standard Transmitter branding and scope. All the BNY beers are more American style beers. They're quicker beers, faster beers. We force carbonate those beers.
If they're pre-prohibition, wouldn't they be... This is a whole, we have like five shows we can do after this, but like Bob was talking about, in those early days, 1800s, these guys called Budweiser had to use rice to modify it. You're talking about before the pre-prohibition, would they have learned to rush things? They probably did, right? Because they were trying to make a lot of beer.
That's a good question. I don't know. So,
another time, don't worry.
It's still a lager, so it needs plenty of its time. But some of the other BNY beers, like the BNY 5, and then we do a couple English beers that are BNY. They're technically quicker than your standard lager or Belgian beer.
I have an anecdote about that beer. Can I share it?
Please.
So that beer, that specific beer, a few years back, that was 2020, I reached out to a bunch of breweries here in the United States because I was helping out this competition in Costa Rica, the Pura Vida Indie Beer Fest.
Wait, say it again. Where in Costa Rica?
Pura Vida Indie Fest.
One of our first New York friends who started going to beer competitions in Central and South America.
So I reached out to a lot of breweries here in the United States, friends, and Transmitter was one of the ones, breweries that decided to send some beer, even though Anthony and Rob, they don't really care. But they were like very supportive, and they sent beer to this competition, which kind of helped elevate the quality, because there was a lot of breweries from the United States that sent their beer. So, you know, imagine for brewers from Central America competing with Firestone Walker, Allagash, Transmitter, KCBC, Fifth Hammer, you know, all this established breweries. It was very exciting for them. But this specific beer, the pre-prohibition, they sent it, and it took a silver medal in that competition. So,
Miguel, what does it mean to you as a friend of beer, Transmitter's 10th anniversary?
It's a remarkable milestone, you know, in this day and age where the industry is, to be able to stand for 10 years, it tells a lot. It tells a lot about who they are as people, number one for me, because I know them for a long time, who they are as people, who they are as a brewery, local in New York City, in the United States. It just shows a lot of, they have been, like I said in the beginning, that they have stayed truth to their north since day one. Me as a consumer and as a fan and as a friend, I appreciate that a lot. because there's a bunch of breweries that have had to pivot and do different things. And I understand it, but, you know, they have lost their north and they just started doing things because they had to. I think Rob and Anthony have been very, you know, they have put their foot on the ground and said, look, this is what we do. And if people like it, great. And if they don't, there's 10,000 other breweries. So kudos to that, you know.
Well, Ian, you know, the last couple of years when I'm out at places like Roberta's Pizza and I'm looking at a beer list, sometimes my eyes glass over. But when I see Transmitter, I'll get it. And I'm always happy. Jen, for you, Miguel was talking about travel. You've got a trip coming up. Let's tell everybody about it. Because I want to go.
I do. It's I'm going to Germany and the Czech Republic. It's my first time in Europe. So super excited that I'm going to be in very major beer countries at that. And I'm going to be helping out at the Prague Beer Fest.
Yay. Right. Awesome.
And which brewery are you going with?
Wild East.
So still, is it of interest for New York breweries to go to other countries? It's kind of amazing.
Like, yeah. Go ahead.
Tell. I mean, they invited you to go. I want to hear more about, like, they must be excited. I don't know.
Yeah, I think it's their second year going. They were invited last year. And it's nice because you get to see what the beer scene is like over there. And I feel like now, especially, a lot of American breweries are kind of taking on the Czech style beers and really focusing even on just like the lucre faucets and what kind of pour that makes. So I'm excited to be doing that training as well.
So tell us a little more about the place you work at. Is it just cans? Do you guys have draft?
We do drafts and cans, and we have anywhere from 12 to 24 drafts at each door, depending which one you're at. And we have about 200 to 300 cans in the fridge. So it's a pretty big operation.
Craft and carry.
And it's craft and carry.
And tell us where the locations are.
We have 8 locations currently.
Whoa.
Yeah. We grew pretty quickly during the pandemic. We took advantage of all the leases, the deals going on. But we have one in Brooklyn at the DeKalb Market. And then we have Upper East Side, Murray Hill, Gramercy, St. Mark's, Chelsea, Hell's Kitchen, and Upper West Side. So definitely a good chance that you'll run into one of us.
And you mentioned that you've been there 5 years. Before that, you worked somewhere where my friends
were. I did, yeah. I worked at Top Hops for a little bit. And I love Ted and Shannon and everyone.
Great. Bob, anything else you want to say about the 10th anniversary of Transmitter?
It's a real honor and privilege to be part of the team and the company. I've been a fan since day one. I said earlier on, you know, I would take their beers everywhere I went because I thought it was the best representation of the best of New York. So it's a real privilege to be here. It's hardly a job because I love telling people about Transmitter, and I just want everyone to know about it.
You're great. Bob, you know a lot about beer, and you give a lot of credit to this brand. And really, really happy that you helped put the show together. Ian, the last beer in our glass, it's something different. It's a little sour.
It is. It's and it's an oldie, but a goodie. Our H series, which are harvest ales, are oak aged sours, completely barrel fermented.
H
harvest. So this is H4. It had secondary ferment with Italian plums. And looking at the label and some of the fuzzies on the cork, it's probably about 7 years old. I think tastes actually pretty good.
Miguel, do you think this is similar to like a lambic from Belgium?
So I have another anecdote about this beer. So in 2015 was the first time I went to Costa Rica for beers, and those were the two beers that I brought. They did one, the H1, I think it was. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yeah, that's Zinfandel.
Zinfandel grapes. And then this one with plum. I brought those two bottles to Costa Rica in 2015. So that was 9 years ago. And everybody was like blown away. Like, what is this? Who are these people? And, you know.
Wait, Ian, there's like 5 more shows from this. But okay, you're mentioning a Belgian lambic style fruited beer, whatever. But you talk about one with plums. And people talk about co-fermenting, which is going to be on our list this year also. But you mentioned wine grapes.
Yeah, we use or have used in the past wine grapes as a secondary ferment. We have experienced experimented a little bit with co-ferment, but typically we're just using a primary and then secondary fermentation. That being said, these beers are delicious. They're fun to make. They're hard to make. The process is very lengthy. They have to be bottled. I think Jen has a couple bottles at Craft and Carry, but I think she mostly mentioned cans of draft. But the current market doesn't really support a ton of bottles, which is unfortunate because the beer that goes in it is typically well deserving of that nice big fancy bottle. But unfortunately, right now we're kind of just focusing on cans and our Belgian beer that goes in cans, and then the draft lagers and
we can go to Brooklyn Navy Yard and try your beers too.
Yeah, we still do some bottling every once in a while, but it's definitely not our primary focus at this point.
Oh. The H7 does well.
Oh, good.
Which one's the H7?
It's the blueberry sour.
And how do you sell that, in cans or bottles?
It's large format. Yeah.
Large format. Yeah. Jen, it's great meeting you. You're on Instagram. What's your identity?
Genuinely Jen.
Yeah, and then this whole show putting together for listeners, Ian, we've met a few years ago. We did a cool show for Beer Week before the pandemic with Bobby at KCBC, and that was pretty neat. And Bob, I know you're going way back to Shelton Brothers, and Miguel also. I think one of these events, New York City Brewer's Choice. I noticed that this guy, the Beer Trekker, was taking and posting not only the best photos, but the most photos. And Jen, it's so great to meet you because these guys singled you out as we said, we want to bring in one retail or beer bar person, and you got chosen.
No, so, thank you, we're honored.
Yeah. I think let's close it out with, how'd you rise up in the ranks? Because you worked at Top Hops. How did you end up at Craft and Carry? And, you know, you got a pretty great job. You're the beer bar for establishment with 8 locations. That's kind of the future of, like, I like retail operations. I like to go in those places and buy my beer.
Yeah, I love my job. It's truly so special and amazing. I actually started at Craft and Carry and then worked at Top Hops for a little bit pre-pandemic. But pretty much I started off as beer tender and then really taught myself everything about beer. When I first started, I was just like, oh, I'm so cool. I drink Heineken and not Budweiser. I knew nothing about beer.
I thought that was cool when I was 18 too.
Yeah. And then I slowly just started learning about like how much goes into beer and really fell in love with it. And then eventually the pandemic did happen and I took a little break, but I came back and I was the manager for the Gramercy location, then helped open Upper West Side, manage that. Just doing all three job titles, beer buyer, manager, and beer tender. And then eventually I was like, too many titles. I'm just going to be the beer buyer. I want to do a good job at it. So now I just do the beer buying.
Wow. Well, it sounds like you had a great trip when you brought a lot of your staff out to Transmitter Brewing.
Yes, for sure. I plan all the brewery tours and Transmitter was definitely on the list.
You should let us know when you're going on brewery tours. I might tag along with you.
Yeah, you'll have to.
All right. Well, guys, thanks so much for joining us. Go around the room one more time. Say your name and who you are and we'll close out.
Miguel Rivas, the Beer Trekker.
Sexy.
Bob W. from Transmitter Brewing.
I don't have a cool voice. Jen from Craft and Carry.
Ian Colmus, head brewer at Transmitter. And just want to plug one more time, 10th anniversary party is Friday, May 31st, 4 p.m.
All right. At Transmitter Brewing.
Yes.
Can I get into Brooklyn Navy Yard? Don't I have to go through a fancy gate or something?
They'll let you in the front door.
You can just walk right in. I love that.
Building 77.
I'm overdue. Thanks so much. And to our engineer, Armin Spengen. I'm Jimmy Carboni. I'm the host, Beer Sessions Radio. Big shout out, Heritage Radio Network. 15th anniversary, 15th season of Beer Sessions Radio. We'll catch you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right. Thanks so much, guys. Woo! Woo.
Guys, party!
Beer Sessions Radio is powered by Simplecast. Thanks for listening to Heritage Radio Network. Food radio supported by you. Keep in touch at heritageradionetwork.org/subscribe.
Hey, everybody, I'm Nick Latham.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.